Thanks for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. I've got a little quote for you. It says, "Pay attention and the birds will reveal themselves to you." That's what our next guest grandpa always said about bird watching. And we're talking about the book with the author, Birds of the Great Lakes, How They Look and Sound, Where to Find Them, and How to Protect Them. And our guest, Dexter Patterson, joins us. He's an educator, a multimedia professional, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. And as we talk with Dexter, I hope you'll join in. Give us a question. What questions do you have about our birds of the Great Lakes, our Wisconsin birds, and other birds as well? You'll have some answers for you. Maybe you want to know about habitat or bird behavior. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dexter, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Larry. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Dexter and I go back a ways, I should say. He's now teaching a course that I used to teach before I retired, and from what I've been told, doing a magnificent job. So it's great. And it wasn't about birds. We didn't have the course wasn't about birds. But Dexter has written this book and has been really involved pretty much your whole life, Dexter? Or
yeah, I always tell people I always liked birds. Even when I was a kid, I just didn't give them the attention they deserved. I'd be like, red bird, blue bird, yellow bird, you know, and I'd be watching them, but I didn't know what I was looking at. I just liked them.
So your book, Birds of the Great Lakes, what I'm really finding it interesting, but you tell us what people can learn from the book.
You know, so I tell people it's small but mighty, so it's a very compact book. But it has over 150 different bird species in it from 40 different bird families. The little book has over 360 pages, Larry. So there's a lot in it, but I made it small for a reason. I wanted it to be easy for people to throw it in their pocket, in their hoodie, have it with them at all times as a resource. But you can learn a lot about, you know, I tell people it's not this exhaustive list of birds that come through the Great Lakes region. Is more meant to make you curious, to start to pay attention, like my grandpa would say. So it's, I like to call it a window to wonder, where you open it up and then he's like, wow, I didn't know that was here. Wow, I didn't know that was here. Wow, I didn't know that was here. So ultimately getting you to pay attention. Yes, you'll probably see these birds that I have featured in the book. It was really hard, by the way, to pick what I wanted to put in here. But you'll probably see way more. And so that is the key, is I really wanted to create something that was accessible, that was easy to use, that you could have with you all time, and to get you curious and paying attention about the birds that are around us.
Well, the book, the photography in the book is fantastic.
Thank you.
And you took many of the photos of the birds in the book.
Yeah, I took most of them. I think I crowdsourced just a handful where I didn't like the photo I had. Maybe it was too far away, couldn't see enough of the bird. I wanted to really make sure that people could see each bird, but the vast majority, 96, 97% of the photos are mine.
And they're really, really good. How long did it take you to put this all together?
I would say The good thing about the photos part of it is, I mean, I've been taking photos of birds for a long time.
Yeah.
So I had a nice library, and then there were, you know, some where I say, well, I probably should get a better shot of this one. So there were a few where I would go out and try to get better photos. But overall, putting the book together took me about 15 months to write it and put it together, and about 2 years for us to kind of complete the process.
You know, we were just talking with Stan Temple about phenology, of course, the study of the seasons. What are the birds doing now that fall is turning to winter?
You know, we have those late fall migrants coming through. It was pretty cool. I was at Horicon Marsh over the weekend for one of my book tour events. And, you know, I saw my first American tree sparrow of the late fall. So I was like, yay, they're back. I saw a bunch of dark-eyed juncos. So you still have these late migrants kind of coming through. And we have yet to hit peak weird duck season, Larry. So I'm really excited about that. The waterfowl are going to be coming through here. I've seen a couple reports of snowy owls already in the state. So you have birds on the move. My feeders with American goldfinches have been very busy lately. So they're keeping themselves busy out there right now. So there's still birds on the move in this late fall season.
Dexter Patterson, our guest today, author of Birds of the Great Lakes. Questions for him? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. If you have birdhouses or bird baths, important to keep them clean.
100%. I try to tell people to clean them at least every 2 weeks, and using kind of like a bleach solution, 9 parts water, 1 part bleach, really easy, effective. And I do that all the time. Just kind of bake it into your habit. And this time of year, as we go into winter, those, especially the fresh water sources, heated bird baths are really, really helpful for the birds, as well as, you know, a nice food source as the food becomes more scarce for them. So if you want to see potentially some red poles come to your yard, and, you know, the little chickadee-dee-dees, you might even have some American goldfinches that are hanging around. The water feature can bring in American robins that are sticking around as well. So it is really kind of helpful. And then you can have birds hanging out in your yard if you're blessed or lucky enough to have one, you know, throughout the winter.
You know, one of the things that I enjoy about your book is the, as you look at it, you have one little section that talks about little facts.
Mm-hmm.
About the birds. And one that I literally opened the book up and I hit the blue jay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I had ever read this. The blue jay feathers are actually brown.
Yes.
Because of the melanin, which is a dark pigment. But there's an optical effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the blue light that you see, the blue UV light, kind of has this reaction with these crystals in the feather. And that's what allows us to see the blue in the actual feather. It's kind of cool. So if you happen to be hiking and you see a blue jay feather on the ground, you can actually pick it up and turn away from the sun and block it from that UV, from those blue lights, and you can see the change in the feather, which is really kind of cool to see it. And so if you happen to be out hiking and you see a blue jay feather, they're pretty busy right now storing food for the winter. So good chance you might be able to find one out there one of these times. Pick it up and hide it from the sun and kind of see that reaction in front of you. It's kind of mind-blowing.
It is indeed. And I've got some more little surprises that we can talk about as we go along. But I wanted you to mention your birding club of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the club.
Yeah, so I'm the co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. So if anybody doesn't know what that acronym stands for, it's Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. And I created this birding club because I wanted to grow the birding community. You know, as I was getting into birding and going out to a lot of these traditional events, I was often the only person of color there. And for me, I just felt like, man, birds are way too cool for this giant segment of people not to know that birding is for them. So I wanted to create a space where everybody, where Black, brown, everybody in between could come out, enjoy birds together. And I get this question asked all the time. Hey, I'm a white person. Can I come to your club? And I say, you can come. It's as simple as, do you want to see the birding community be more welcoming in our state? Do you want to see it more inclusive? Do you want to see it more diverse? yes, if the answer to those questions is yes, you are welcome at our events. And that's what you see, Larry. You see people of all walks of life at our events every month, and really, really kind of showing people that birding is for everyone, and doing my part in our beautiful state to grow the birding community.
And I should mention that your website, which I really knew would be really good.
Thank you.
Given your own skills, it's BIPOC.org. Is that what it is? I forgot now.
Yeah, BIPOCBirdingClub.org.
BIPOC, B-I-P-O-C. No, BIPOC.
BIPOCBirdingClub.org.
Dexter Patterson, our guest, and he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with him about birds and birding. And if you have some birding questions or bird questions, I hope you'll join in. He knows a lot. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR News. And then we'll be back with Dexter. I'm Larry Mealer. Great to have you along today on WPR News, talking today with the author of the book, Birds of the Great Lakes, How They Look and Sound, Where to Find Them, and How to Protect Them. Dexter Patterson, our guest. Dexter is an educator, multimedia professional, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Tell us about your favorite bird, or maybe a rare sighting you're proud of, or just a question. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. Richard in Beloit called and said he would like to hear about binoculars for bird watchers. What do you recommend for binoculars?
You know, I always tell people, start with what's in your budget, right? So don't think that you need to go out and spend hundreds and hundreds. Some people spend thousands of dollars on binoculars, and that is not necessary. I would also say take advantage of local resources. So the Feminist Bird Club of Madison has a birding backpack program, for example, in the Madison Public Library, where you can check out a backpack. It has field guides in it and binoculars in it. Many of the birding clubs that you can go to, including ours or the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, they have binoculars that you can borrow as well for all of the events. So I would say before you get started, maybe try some out. And see what's working for you. Do you want an 8x32? Do you want an 8x42? Do you want a 10x32? Do you want a 10x42, right? You have all these different options for you, but binoculars are super helpful to get you closer into the environment, get you closer to the bird, and allow you to see the bird from a safe distance where you're not bothering them and you're actually getting to see some more details of the actual bird. So the first thing I always tell people before they consider binoculars is try some out. You can even go into some of these stores and try them out and, you know, find something within your budget. If it's a $50 pair of binoculars, so be it. They will work fine until you feel like you need another pair. So don't put that pressure on yourself thinking you need to have the best of the best of the best. It's just a tool. And I tell people all the time, you don't need the fancy equipment to go birding. Do whatever is in your budget.
And if you have the opportunity, I think it's a good idea to take a hold of those binoculars and then hold them up to your eyes and hold them there for a minute or so. Sometimes I've had some heavier ones that are sometimes a little difficult to hold for long periods of time, but that's just me. Maybe somebody else would have a different thought on it.
Yeah, and I always say too, it's real easy to get lost in binoculars for folks that are just kind of starting out with them. So I always tell people, you know, before we get started at our bird events, I always ask, does anybody need binoculars? I hand them out. I'm always asking, are there any new birders? And typically every event, there's a couple new birders that are joining us. And I'll do a quick binocular tutorial with them, show them how to adjust the eyepieces, and really kind of let them know, all right, I'll pick a sign or something really easy for them to like try to focus on in their binoculars first. And I'll teach them how to get whatever we're looking at, that landmark in focus, and teach them how to do that. And then I'll really start to stress the fact of, if we're looking at birds and you're trying to get your binocular on the birds, is look at the bird first. Look at what you're looking at first, and then put the binoculars up, because if you're trying to find them in the trees, with the, you're just, Larry, you're going to be all over the place. You know, it's not going to end up well for you.
Bob in Waupaca, what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to let your listeners know that there is a newer wildlife refuge that's opened up to the public actually last May of last year. It's in the city of Waupaca and the town of Waupaca. It's approximately 300 acres, and if you go to the website, woodpilewildliferefuge.com, the first thing that'll pop up is a site that'll take you to eBird, and if you scroll through there, you'll see the people that have been reporting since last year, the sightings that they've had, and I think they were up to about 170 different species of birds that have been seen out there. So it's in the city of Waupaca. The map and location is on the website, and it's been open to the public since last May of last year. It's about 300 acres, and it consists of there's some primarily wetlands, but there is an upland, heavily forested 50-acre parcel that has a change in topography. That 50 acres of about 100 feet, so it's got some real dramatic scenery topography there. So I just wanted to
let you know. Yeah, pretty cool. Bob, thanks. Have you been there yet, Dexter?
Hey, I will. I want to give a big shout out to Waupaca, actually, and my bird banding mentor, Bob Welch. He passed away not a little less than 2 years ago. He lived in Waupaca, and so shout out to Bob, calling from Waupaca. One of my dearest and biggest birding mentors was from Waupaca, and I did bird banding up there for years with him. This time of year, we'd be banding northern saw-whet owls in Waupaca. So I have a lot of really, really special memories in that community. So.
Oh, Bob, thanks a lot for calling and letting us know. Sherry in Clinton, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I was recently in Door County, and we took the ferry over to Washington Island. And where you catch the ferry, there on the breakwater were some really big dark brown birds with maybe kind of tan chests. And I didn't have a bird book handy, and I didn't think about it for a while. And when I got to my bird book, the only thing that looked kind of close to it was maybe a cormorant. Would that be a possibility?
Yeah, double crested cormorants be a really good possibility. Maybe some younger birds there for sure.
Yeah, I think you got cormorants there, Sherry. Thanks for calling. Rick in Juneau, Alaska. What's on your mind?
Well, hello there. I was telling earlier, I am a child of the 60s in southeast Wisconsin, and I've been gone for over 40 years now. And you know, living up here in Juneau, Alaska, I see a lot of birds that are not there in southeast Wisconsin. But having recently retired, I was in my childhood home for September and October, and I was amazed to see the number of wild turkeys running around in my yard. And also stunned that the bald eagles have returned to southeast Alaska. Now, up here, if you want to see a bald eagle, you just tell the tourists, oh, go to the dump, because there's hundreds of them. seeing them in southeast Wisconsin has been a wonderful thing to see again after so many years. And I'm looking forward to my permanent move back down to southeast Wisconsin, that is, in retirement, and continuing a tradition that my mother instilled upon me, which is to attract as many different types of birds as possible to our yard, including red-headed woodpeckers that live in the snags that we don't cut down to the ground. We cut them off about 20 feet above.
You're breaking up there, Rick. Comment, Dexter?
I love that he said he does not cut down the snags. Those are homes. Those are habitats for not only woodpeckers, but nuthatches and chimney swifts and all these incredible birds whose homes are being taken away. So I know a lot of times people might view them as eyesores, but you never know. You might have an eastern screech owl in your yard or something. So keep them up. And I love that he talked about the bald eagle and the return of the bald eagle. Fantastic conservation story, along with the sandhill crane. When I think about the state of Wisconsin, I always tell people I love the American robin, but I would love to see the sandhill crane be the state bird of Wisconsin. It is so majestic when you think about, you just had Stanley on and you're thinking about Aldo Leopold and, you know, him talking about land ethic and mentioning how we basically didn't deserve those birds because we almost wiped them out. And now it's one of the best conservation stories when you think about birds in the country. And it started right here in our state. So yeah. I love that call.
Yeah, I do too. And speaking of woodpeckers, I was looking in your book, and I noticed the pileated, which you point out is the largest remaining woodpecker in North America. Of course, the ivory-billed woodpecker would have been a little bigger, but it's has been extirpated.
Yeah. And I think you appreciate this, Larry. That bird, that photo of that pileated woodpecker is right over at Picnic Point. That's where I got that shot.
Well, that is pretty nice. I can mention that I have, there's a famous bird wood carver who carved both the ivory-billed and the pileated, and I have both of those sitting on my, it's sitting somewhere in the house. I've got decoys and bird wood carvings all over the place, but it's pretty fun to have those. Jeremy and Mineral Point, your turn. Hi, Jeremy.
What's going on, y'all? What's going on, Dexter? I just wanted to call and send some positive affirmation. I'm a black male living in Mineral Point, the city. I've watched the work you have done over the years, and I just want you to know the ripple and the impact that you're making is tremendous, and it's really timely, and it's been helping me and my community navigate the tricky time. So thank you so much, brother, for all that you do. We appreciate you. We see you, and we hope to continue to elevate this movement because it's something so important for the times right now.
Bless you so much, Jeremy. That gave me chills. Like, you literally just made my day. And I always say that, like, birds bring people together. Like, I encourage people, go to my website, go to my social media, go to wiscobirder.com, go to @wiscobirder on Instagram, and look at what I bring out at events. Like, the diversity, old, young, it doesn't matter, every shape, every color. I always tell people the birding community should reflect the birds we all love. Birds come in all different colors. They come in all different shapes and sizes. Some are fast, some are slow. Heck, some of them can't even fly, right? And I think about people, and I think about us as a community. Birds are such a great way to bring people together, and I especially want folks like Jeremy and black and brown folks out here in Wisconsin to understand that nature is for you. I create these spaces for people to feel safe. Some people be like, I can't go out there by myself. I don't feel safe. But you can be safe with us, 20, 30, sometimes 40 plus people together in the woods, having a good time, finding community with one another. So Jeremy, thank you so much. I'm going to have to get out to Mineral Point and lead a walk so I can meet you in person because you just made my day.
And that BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, you guys do a lot of events.
Yes. Yeah, we do. We host monthly events, at least two in the Madison and Milwaukee area. But we also, some months, we may have specialty events. Like, I'm on book tour right now, so I've been traversing this state and going up to communities all over the state. But some months, like December, we do Christmas bird count. We do citizen science, we do bird banding, we do eagle nest box monitoring, we'll do kestrel nest box monitoring, we'll do different things like that. So there are some months, or it's Black Birders Week, we'll do multiple events in a month. So maybe it's two or three events, but you at least get two opportunities to get outside with our birding club every single month, 12 months a year. Yes, we bird in the winter, folks. People ask me that all the time. I'm like, yes, we bird all year round. The birds are still here. Some leave and new ones show up. So we always got something going on, and people always like, oh, I missed this one or I missed that one. And I'm like, don't worry about it. We will be here for you when you can make it. All right. So don't worry about it. We'll always have opportunities for you and welcome you with open arms when you're able to make it.
Steven Dresser called, but couldn't stay with us. Had a question about cedar waxwings. Steven says they fly in groups, but do they also nest in groups?
They don't nest in groups. You know, they may nest in certain habitat areas together, but they have their own nest. They maintain their own nest. What I love about the cedar waxwings, especially in Wisconsin, as the weather is getting colder, you're going to start to see them on the berry trees. You're going to start seeing them on the junipers. You're going to see them eating crab apples and all these different berry trees. And they're very like mindful of preserving these food resources for themselves. They'll feed on other things when it's warm, and they really save these berries for the colder months, which is really beautiful when you can see a group of them just show up on a crabapple tree and there's snow on it. It's just beautiful.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about all the interesting things that I've read in your book, and when nesting came to mind, and you have a really cool little story about Virginia rails.
Mm.
They've developed kind of an ingenious survival technique with their nests. They create floating nests in the dense marshland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you think about it, there's other birds, like sandhill cranes will build in the middle of a marsh and in the water. That works sometimes it doesn't, but this helps keep their nest more hidden in these dense marshes, and so it is it's really cool. And they'll even create decoy nests too. So
rails will, yeah.
Yeah. So they do a lot of really cool things to try to maximize the survival of their young. So it is really, really kind of fascinating.
And one other that, there were a lot of others, but green herons.
that one always gets people.
they'll drop insects in the water or maybe a little piece of feather or a little piece of wood or something.
Yeah, they'll chum the water and they're literally just like fishing and trying to bring in things, and they'll throw it out in the water. They'll pick it back up. Like, it is fascinating when you watch it. Like, birds they're so freaking smart. They're so cool. And that's why I said about it being windows to wonder. Like, you see this bird and then like you realize it's nothing like that other one. So many people, especially new birders, they just think every bird was just a robin or every bird is just a bird, right? And then they start to find out that there's so many different ones and there's so many different ones around them, and it kind of blows their mind. And when you start to learn about them, little fun facts about that is it's kind of mind blowing. I said, like, the more I learn about birds, they kind of turn me into the emoji on your phone where your head's blowing up. You know, I tell people that because, like, every time I learn something new and I'm just like, wow, like, they are fascinating. They're so cool.
Clara Kneipert, who is the producer for the show, was telling me as she looked through the book, she She really found it interesting that hummingbirds are the second most diverse bird family on Earth.
Yeah, and a lot, especially us here, like we, the main one we're going to get is the ruby-throated hummingbird. We might get a vagrant Allens or, you know, some random, you know, West Coast hummingbird will show up. But when you get to the West Coast, when you go down in the Arizona area along the border of Mexico, there are so many species of hummingbirds in that area, South America. So I think that the fact that we typically only see one, it does we just don't think about how many hummingbirds there are out there, how many different hummingbird species.
Well, your book, Birds of the Great Lakes, would be a handy one to take along because it, what is it, 5x6, something like that, the size
of
it?
Yeah, it's pretty small. Like I said, you can hold it in your hand. I got a pretty big hand, so it almost fills up my hand, but it fits in your pocket. It'll fit in a pouch of a hoodie. And, you know, so it is very, very accessible and something you can kind of keep with you. Don't need a huge backpack or anything.
Bruce and Baraboo, it's your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, Larry.
What's on your mind?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I was in northern Wisconsin on the shore of a lake, and it was a calm day, and it was a sunny day, and there was a hatch of midges out over the lake, and I watched red-breasted nuthatches, which are a stubby little bird, fly out and feed on this midge hatch swarming over the lake. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the bird-insect connection.
That's their favorite food, most of them, a lot of them, right? That's where they're getting their protein if they're not just strictly seed eaters. Nut hatches are fascinating. It's red-headed, red-breasted. The red-breasted nut hatches are fascinating. They're tiny little things too. It's kind of cool. I do bird banding and we had one of each, and the white-breasted nuthatch is trying to bully the red-breasted nuthatch. But they can actually, you can hold them and you can turn them and they'll hang upside down. Seeing them actually fly out into a swarm of birds is very unique because they're typically going up and down the tree trunks and really kind of foraging and in evergreens and things like that, especially this time of year. So that's definitely some different behavior that I don't typically see, but that's their favorite food for most birds. And I'm not going to put them all in there, but that's where they get their protein.
And you mentioned robins in passing there, and robins are interesting to me because they will hang around some of them, at least in winter here in Wisconsin. I always have one or two in my neighborhood, but they completely change their diet.
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden they'll start eating different things. They'll like pop up at your feeder and you're like, what's going on? I have American robin and my bird feeder. What I find is the water feature also brings them in throughout the winter, and then they'll explore, and next thing you'll see them in crabapple trees and different things. So I think it's cool. They definitely shift their focus from their worms because the ground is frozen. They can't get to them. So,
well, Bird Joy, you are a guy, I think, that are a person who spreads bird joy. You talk about bird joy. What's the experience like for you spreading that bird joy?
You know, that is kind of my mission. My mission is to spread as much bird joy as possible across the state, because birds change my life, you know, and they bring me a lot of joy. And I want to spread that to as many people as possible. I also have seen, you know, in my time with birding, is that over time, people that have been birding for a long time, they start to lose their joy, Larry. And I want to encourage people not to do that, not to get so fixated on adding another bird to their list. And now you're not paying attention to the 40 other birds you saw that day because you're chasing just this one bird. And I see this over and over and over with seasoned birders and people that are just trying to add that next bird to their list. They're running to Superior to go see a varied thrush, and they don't get it, and then they're all upset. But you saw Snow Yow, or you saw this, you saw that, and they don't even care anymore. So it's kind of sad. Bird joy is about appreciating every bird. When I'm out in the field, I tell my members that are there, bird every bird, appreciate every bird. We're not promised to see them, right? They're not promised to be here forever. We lost a passenger pigeon with what the largest populated bird in our country. We wiped it out. We almost wiped out the sandhill crane. So I always tell people, appreciate all the birds. There's something different to see. Spend time with at least just one bird and notice the little differences on it. They're all different, right? Every season is different behaviors. There's always something different to pay attention to. So that's bird joy, is really kind of being in the moment, constantly appreciating every single bird that you are lucky enough to spend some time with, and never losing sight of how happy they used to make you and how happy they do make you.
Well, I tell you what, Dexter, you've written a great little book here, Birds of the Great Lakes, How They Look and Sound, Where to Find Them, How to Protect Them. Best little book of birds, Birds of the Great Lakes. Dexter, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Will you come back and be with us again?
Larry, if you need me, I'm there. You know, we go back, you know, life sciences, communications. The whole staff told me to tell you hi. We miss you. We appreciate you. So if you need me, you got me.
Dexter, thank you so much. Dexter Patterson. You can go online and take a look at his organization, the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. And, man, take a look at his book, Birds of the Great Lakes, How They Look and Sound, Where to Find Them, and How to Protect Them. That is the subtitle. Well, there's a lot of birds at Horicon Marsh. And we're going to find out next what's going on at Horicon Marsh with the birds. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.